And now on the rundown, we turn to a conversation with Republican Representative Brad Wilson of Kaysville. In 2012, Wilson sponsored legislation which led to a program to drug test certain welfare applicants in the state. It's a concept that has received its fair share of criticism both across the country and in Utah. Wilson joined us in studio today to give us the background on the program and his perspective on its effectiveness. Representative Wilson, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So I was hoping we could get a little bit of the background. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about this program, the legislation you sponsored, and how the state went about creating this program.
Sure. Well, I appreciate the question. And let me first of all say that it's a little complicated to get your arms around all of the different programs we have as part of what many think of as our welfare system in the country and in our state. And it's an important safety net that we have for people for a variety of reasons that need to tap into these programs. The particular program that the bill we passed in the 2012 session dealt with is a program called Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, or TANF. And in Utah, we have customized that program, if you will, and we call it the Family Employment Program. And the objective of this particular program is singular, and it's to get people back to work. So that's what this program does. And this is the part of the safety net that actually provides cash benefits to families. And they're modest. A family of three would receive about $500 a month of cash benefits if they went on this program. And the average person that goes on this program is on it for 8 to 9 months. Around the country, that length is much, much longer. 2 to 3 years is the average.
Well, so why is that the case here in Utah? Was there a thinking behind that?
Well, I think that it's because our focus for this program has been to get people back to work. So if you're going to be part of the program in Utah, we expect you from day one to identify the type of work that you're capable of doing and go out and actively start preparing yourself to find that work and get into a job. Where in other states, they're not really tying the benefits to actively seeking employment and getting off the benefits. And I believe, and I think most people believe, that folks that go on these welfare programs don't really want to stay on them forever. And I think our efforts here to make the focus of this program getting a job has proven to be why it's one of the most successful programs in the country.
And what you're defining as success there is the short duration that people stay on these programs.
Yeah, they're on the assistance for a short period of time. And the reason they're on it a shorter period of time in Utah than other places is because they get a job.
So I'm wondering, sort of, how does drug testing come into this? Was there data out there showing that a greater number of people involved in these programs were using drugs or spending the money on drugs? What was the sort of impetus for your legislation?
Let me set some context for you in terms of how this TANF program works and the people that are on it. We know that in Utah, 8 to 10% of the people that are on TANF benefits have some kind of chemical drug dependency challenges. We also know, however, that there are other challenges that these people face, whether it's educational needs or mental illness or things of that nature. But we have to kind of deal with these holistically, but at the same time, we have to also identify these problems and challenges people face and kind of tick them off one at a time. And so I think the question becomes, if we know there's a challenge with people in this program having drug and chemical issues, should we deal with it? Well, the answer is yes. So how do we deal with it? And the way we were dealing with it before this legislation was people could come in, start getting benefits, and we were seeing in about 10% of the population that was coming in that there were some behaviors and some challenges that we were identifying 3 to 4 months into the program. We were then identifying that they had these drug issues. And so the thinking with the way this bill ultimately came out was, let's find those people on day one instead of on day 90 and get them the help they need if they want it. We'll provide through Medicaid the drug counseling that they need to get off drugs. So that's, at the end of the day, sort of how this program works, is we're screening people at the beginning through a written test. The written test tells us if there's a high likelihood that there is a drug abuse issue. And don't ask me how the written test does its magic. I know it's used all across the country and has a pretty high rate of success.
I wonder about, can it be gamed? Can somebody say, I know that if I answer this question in this particular way, they might scream me out as being somebody who's...
Yeah, and I'm sure there's some of that, but the data we've seen shows that the test is fairly accurate. And how that works, there's people a lot smarter than me that write these kinds of tests and know how the human mind works. So we use this as a screening tool, and then if we see a red flag on the screening tool, then we administer an official drug test. And if someone shows positive results on that drug test, then they have a choice to make. They can choose to come in and get drug counseling and the help that they need to get off the program and start taking random drug tests. If they do those things and they are clean, they can get the benefits. If they refuse to move forward, either by taking the drug test or by not getting off drugs and staying on drugs, then at some point they'll get what's called a sanction, and they'll get taken out of the program for a period of 90 days to 180 days or even longer. But we've built this so that it's not punitive for people that want to come in and get the help. And I think it's a reasonable expectation to say, if you want to be on public assistance, there's a few things you need to do, and they're pretty simple. But if the focus of our program is to get you back to work, you're going to be a lot more likely to get a job and, most importantly, keep a job if you don't have these drug challenges.
I want to go back to one nuts and bolts question here, which is is everybody who comes in to apply for this program required to take the screening test that tells you your high probability?
Yes, that's the case.
And then how soon after? I mean, is it immediately, as soon as you see that red flag, that they have to take a drug test?
I'm going to have to check with the Department of Workforce Services and see what the lag is between the screening and the actual drug test. I'm not sure the answer to that. There's a number of things that, as we've now seen this legislation be in effect for a year, we need to study and evaluate where it's working and where we need to maybe make some changes.
So what did you think of the results from the first year? Did you have any expectations of what they might end up being? And then maybe you can compare that to how the actual results were.
Yeah. Well, I think we're seeing numbers consistent with what we expected in terms of people that would either test positive for drugs on the actual drug test or people that refuse to take the drug test, which is a high indicator that they probably are using drugs. And so those numbers are consistent with sort of what we expected. The surprise for me is we had a high number of people, about 250 people, who chose to not move forward because of the drug test.
And so they just didn't take the drug test whatsoever?
Yeah. Basically, I mean, this is an oversimplification of the process, but the Department of Workforce Services said, looks like we need to administer a drug test. It's going to be simple. You just need to do this. And they said, no, I refuse to do that because I know that I'm going to... They didn't say why, but we have a feeling that it's probably for most of them, they're using drugs. So,
The Department of Workforce Services says that as a result of those 250 people not accessing these benefits, that's resulted in a savings of $250,000 in the first year of this program. I guess I'm wondering, how does that work? If these 250 people, they're being identified as having a high likelihood of being of using drugs. And so from that moment forward, they can't proceed with their application, and that's where these savings are coming from?
Yeah, so the application process is put on hold until they do that.
Okay.
And that's their choice. But, it's interesting because at the end of the day, our goal wasn't to prevent people from tapping into the benefits. Our goal was to help people get a job and keep a job. And so when we take a step back and look at the objective of this holistically, Yeah, we saved probably more than $350,000. That's assuming people are just on benefits for 3 months. Mm. So that calculation comes from 250 people forfeiting 3 months' worth of benefits. When I've kind of mentioned earlier, we see those benefits actually asking for 8 to 9 months. So the savings is probably higher. But let me kind of flip it around a little bit and say, just think how much better it would have been if those 250 people had come in and got the help they needed and then got a job sooner. The financial impact for them and their families, and quite frankly, the state and all taxpayers would have been much greater than $350,000 of savings. So
maybe savings is kind of the wrong way to be evaluating this.
Well, I think that it is a savings to that line item in the Department of Workforce Services budget. I mean, they didn't spend $350,000 on benefits, but the bigger picture is this should be an investment in these people's families and their careers. And so we need to get to the bottom of that.
Do you know how many people in past years prior to the screening, you know, began the application process and then dropped out of that application process?
Well,
because that might show whether or not there was this is comparatively savings or not, I guess.
So one of the very last components of the application process, if not the last component of the application process, is this drug screening and testing. And so historically, nearly everyone that gets to this point has gone on to continue and complete their application. So we are seeing a high number of people that would have gone on benefits not continue, and I'd have to verify exactly what the ratio is.
But it seems like there's a spike in the number of people walking away.
Yeah, there is, and so that's true.
Okay. So what I'm just wondering, what happens to those? Do we know what happens to those 250 people after they drop out of that process?
Well, that's one of the things we're going to study. Is you know, there's a lot of other components of the welfare system that they can tap into that don't have a drug test, mm-hmm. and you know, we'll have to see exactly how many of them kind of focus on tapping into the benefits of those programs. But we're going to have to look at that a little bit more.
Also, in this past year, 12 people were caught using drugs while through this program, through this screening process. What happened? What's happening to them?
Yeah. So the 12 individuals who were testing, who tested positive for drug use, were able to get benefits. They needed to go into treatment and actively do the other parts of the family employment program, seeking work, et cetera. And so there's really no change for them as long as they go to the drug counseling that they need, and then they take these random drug tests. And my understanding is for at least half of those folks, it's going quite well. And so we are helping some people. The big question is how do we get additional people to kind of see the value of the assistance that's provided?
When we look at these programs across the country, or programs that are similar to this across the country, I know that in some other states, everybody who comes in and applies for an assistance program will be drug tested, and that is a pretty enormous cost for the state to run a program like that, which is, you know, just one part of the complaint that critics have about these programs. Maybe you could talk a little bit about how we here in the state of Utah differentiate ourselves.
In terms of the landscape of drug testing for welfare, there's been a number of attempts around the country, the most notable Florida and Michigan, both requiring every applicant to take a drug test. It's a urine test before they can apply for benefits. And those efforts have been held up in the courts, and they're not actively doing those in those states right now because of legal challenges. So we took a different approach, also because we have a different focus for our welfare program. Our welfare program is not focused on paying benefits. Our welfare program is focused on getting people back to work.
In the Salt Lake Tribune, you're quoted as saying that our goal isn't to weed people out of the program, but to get them the help that they need. However, you have received some criticism from those who, well, actually, maybe I'll ask you about that. What kind of criticism have you received?
The criticism of doing this at all has centered around, A, why are we singling out welfare applicants for drug testing? And my answer is, well, we're not. You have to take drug tests in many, many cases for employment. And in fact, I got a call after one of the articles you're talking about from one of the state's largest employers that is in heavy construction. And they told me that for safety reasons, in many of their projects, they require every employee to take a drug test every week. And there's a lot of employers across the state that require drug tests. And we're trying to get people prepared for work. And that's the component of the TANF program that we're addressing with this. Now, there are other things we need to do, and I recognize that, around educational needs and mental illness needs for people in this program. In the state of Utah, we have a requirement on our bills to deal with single issues. And so that's what we dealt with this bill. But I think that when we see an opportunity to make a program better, we should move forward with it. And that's what we did with this piece of legislation. So,
Representative Wilson, we are just about out of time. You know, I suppose we could end on a lighter note here, and maybe I'll ask, you know, when is the state legislature going to be required to take drug tests before, before they go into session?
So, you know, I've been emailed a few suggestions to that effect.
I'm sure.
And it's probably not a bill that I will be running, but maybe if people want to do that, they can contact their state legislator and request them to do that.
Representative Brad Wilson of Kaysville, I want to thank you for coming in here today and explaining your perspective on these programs.
Thank you.
You can find a copy of this interview and all of the conversations we feature on the program at our website, kcpw.org. I'm Roger McDonough. This is The Rundown. We'll be right back. That's full time for The Rundown this afternoon. Our show is produced by Lauren Colucci. We had additional help, as always, from Jesse Ellis and Mr. T. Ford. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. Monday on the program, tune in for a story about recovering from mental illness and to hear about the local resources available for those who need it. I'm Roger McDonough, and you've been listening to The Rundown. The Utah Business Report and Marketplace are coming up next.